Kelly Breen joins us. Congratulations.
How you doing?
I'm great. How you been?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
What's the story with this cult?
He's fast. You know, he's a nice, good-looking colt. More than pleased with him. Ran well first time out. Ran into a nice horse in Maru in his second start, and happy to be training him.
Give us a little of the backstory, then we'll talk about the career arc. 50,000 at OBS April. In fact, just talked to Cassie about an OBS April purchase for a little bit more money. And, winner at first asking, who is Screen Door and who put this horse together?
So I have a new client, and I have to say this has been a very good year for me. Had a good Monmouth Park, I don't want to call it expanding my horizons for what I have, but I've no longer a private trainer for anybody. And it took a couple of years of getting out there and getting my name out. If I would try to say I've been a little bit sheltered as for my growth, and it was, I might've been out in the public eye, but I haven't trained for a whole lot of different people. So I was the leading trainer at Monmouth Park, and that was with a small group of Monmouth Park people. My name, people know my name, but I've only trained for a certain amount of owners. So
yeah,
I get a guy that comes to the barn through a mutual friend. His name is Alan, who owns Screen Door Stable, and I was asked to go to possibly buy a horse or two for him at the OBS sale. And, a budget as to where we might think that a guy getting his first horse would be a decent budget. And if it goes bust, you don't spend too much. And at the same time, where have I've done well in the past is if I had to say to somebody that the 77,000 number is a pretty good number where I've bought a lot of stakes horses or caliber horses of that such. So we went to the sale with the thought of, top number and a low number, and this horse fit right in the middle for 50,000. And so far we've hit a home run.
I would say, looking at Lucky, the Dam, Untamed Passion, and you know what? Just looking at the Dam. This is the Dam, a cage fighter who was a nice stake horse,
mm-hmm.
as it happened. So the 50,000 feels like a bargain, actually.
Yeah, well, that's kind of our meat and potatoes. I don't have unlimited funded owners that says to go to the sale, and I've always been pretty stringent on what I'm looking at, what to buy. I bought all of my horses in the past, mostly as yearlings. When I was working for Ben Perkins Sr. and going to the sales with him, he just had an extreme eye. And he didn't say much to me. I had to do my own learning and watching what he liked, and was very fortunate enough to buy some young horses, whether they were yearlings or two-year-olds. And do well with them, so this is another horse that put a feather in my cap as to saying, this horse I think is quality. So
how did this horse breeze, in the sale, and what did you like about him? When you looked at him,
I can't tell you, I can't divulge too much information.
Or
I'd
have to
kill you. No, I go to the sale. I've got a limited budget, and we got to try and figure out, do your due diligence, look at all the horses that you possibly can, what might fall through the cracks, what might we be able to afford to raise our hand, and, you have all this checklist of what we would like or what I would like for a horse, and I gave Alan a list of about 20 to 25 horses. And he actually came to the sale with me, and we're going to start bidding. we're going to have them vetted out. And this was one of the ones that we were fortunate enough to get. And, you know, he had a nice breeze. He has a long stride. Some of the things that are good for racing, and I don't know about the how good they are for buying, but the workouts are on the poly track at OBS. Not my first surface of top choices, but hey, we bought a horse like this for $50,000, and he went on to do good things. I think in the 2 years ago, I bought Take Charge Paula out of that sale for $70,000 or whatever, and she's graded stakes winner. And so coming out of OBS, we've done well.
Well, and I'm just watching the breeze. First of all, you had a bunch of things that seemed to work together to make this happen. This was on the fourth day of the sale. So, you know, some people end up, you know, you end up with a smaller group. That was a really nice breeze. And he starts out a little high-headed and then really levels off. And he's a long-bodied horse. He's going to stretch out.
Hopefully. We didn't think that he was going to be this fast or need to be this fast. That in two races that he's
unbelievable,
you know, extremely fast races. You know, it's good and it's bad. You know, as for the trainer, I got to worry about his soundness, but at the same time, if you have a horse that is running this fast and doing it easy enough, you'd like to have him in your barn.
He's a big, good-looking horse, boy. The 50,000, great job, Kelly. That's exciting, and of course comes back in this spot. And you know, it doesn't. He seems like a horse that will do what's asked. He's not demanding the lead. This was Paco's first time on him. What did Paco say when he got off?
Well, Paco's been breezing him. He spun me for his first race. So now it's just a matter of who's going to ride him next time out. You know, we like Paco. We'll see what entails in the future. Do we go with a high profile, to say, rider next time out? Do we stay with Paco? You know, and try not to be self-conscious of when you have a guy that didn't want to ride him and now rides him and he wins and you know, loves him. You know, hey, we've loved him from the start. You're the one who didn't want to ride him in the past. So he's gotten three races with three different riders. We do like Paco. I've had luck in the past with Paco, but we'll see. You know, nothing's etched in stone, and he's also, we had a couple offers for him to be for sale. I don't plan on selling him just yet, but, you know, when the right number comes, turning a profit isn't always the worst thing either, so.
Well, the one thing that we've come to, one expression we've come to say is that the answer is always yes. At some point, the answer is always yes.
Everything's for sale. It's just about how much. You know, every horse can go a mile and a quarter. They're just going to find slower horses going a mile and a quarter. So
well, I'm excited for you. And what's the owner's name of Screen Door? You mentioned his first name.
Alan Swift.
Alan Swift. That's a great name. The guy's name is Swift. How can he go wrong?
Yeah. So everything is good. We've worked out plans so far. Now it's just a matter of what plan do we go on from here? What path do we go on from here? Do we have a horse that you always have high hopes of putting on the Derby trail? And we only have a handful of two-year-olds this year. So trying to figure out where we fit in the global picture. You know, he might be our best two-year-old colt, but what does that put you in the realm of, you know, the top dogs that have horses for millions of dollars? You know, hey, he did run a nice race. He ran well. But do we need to go full steam ahead, or do we say let's give him a month or so off and run him in February? But he is in at Palm Meadows. He's in Florida. He's enjoying his stay so far in sunny South Florida. So everybody right now, we're all enjoying it.
Well, I'm excited for you and for the team. This is obviously a serious horse moving into the winter, and you may have one that you left up at Monmouth that's going to run this week. I see you double entered the Orb filly Persisto, who was a very good second in her debut behind what might be a nice horse of Sean Shea and Len Green and John Service. Talk about Persisto.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed in getting beat first time out, to be honest with you. But she's a nice horse. She might have some grass in her future. She's out of a Warfront mare. She's got a little bit of a turf foot. But I'm trying to keep her on the dirt for right now. And, you know, we were hoping, you know, to win first time out. But it is what it is. This next start, you got a couple of nice horses in the race. She's going to end up running on Friday once you enter in back-to-back days.
Right.
The race that was entered for Friday was a mile and an eighth, and that's where we were going. And in the middle of the afternoon, I got a phone call saying from Naira that we're going to make the race a mile. So apparently somebody else, not me, wanted the race going a mile, and they pulled a little fugazi, you know, switch on me, and next thing you know, it's not a mile and an eighth anymore. And it's a mile, but we're in it. You know, you got a couple of nice horses. It's a miniature version of the Who's Who when you got Billy Mott and Todd Pletcher's got two in there, and Rudy Rodriguez got one. It's never an easy spot, but I do like the filly. She's just a big, long stride mare. The longer, the better. That's why we were looking for a mile and an eighth. We entered in the first race with 7 furlongs just as a backup, and they New York said that they would let me out if the race were to go the next day going longer. So right now we're full steam ahead. Friday, Aqueduct. Saturday, I have a filly in at Laurel named Cofactor. She won last time out, a two-year-old filly at Keeneland, and she's in the Halo Stakes, Smart Halo Stakes at Laurel. We won that, I think, with that filly I was speaking about earlier, George Paula. She won that. Was it 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 3 years ago? So for the small horses, small stable that we have, I couldn't be more proud of our barn, of what we've accomplished. Things are doing well. And maybe somebody else will notice me and let me go to the sale for them with a budget where I'll get a tappet. I've never had a tappet before, something like that. So who knows?
That'd be all right. Let me ask you about the two horses that are running actually today, the Holiday Monday, and you got Solar in the sixth at Aqueduct, and you've got Stay Smart in the eighth at Parks, which is a nice little allowance.
Two more over at Laurel today. So
that's right. That's right.
So we got four horses in. I'll be doing a lot of stuff on the internet, watching races while I'm camped out at my house here in Boynton Beach. So we got first time or a second time starter at Laurel, and she should run good in the first race there. We have another horse that and a claimer over at Laurel named Perimeter, who's coming off of a poor performance on the grass, but he's back on the dirt. He should run well. Solar's in New York, coming off a third place race in the claimer over at the Meadowlands, and if to say drew a poor post of the 12 post, but if we're speed and we're going to make a bold move, I think we're going to just send them to try and put them into the race early, because if you're rating from the 12 post, you lose too much ground to actually be effective. And what else do we have? Stay Smart as a Jersey bred running in an allowance race over at Park. So we're geared up for today. I'm just trying to call up all these different places now, make sure all the horses shipped all right, and we're all settled in.
Really nice, Kelly. And I see that, you know, speaking of those, you know, the ownership situation, that USA Racing and Catalino?
Cavallino.
Yeah. They've sent you. they've got a few with you.
Yes. Yes. They get a little partnership that was actually two different partnerships that I had trained for. And at Monmouth Park, we were looking to claim the both similar horses, the same horses. And it was a pretty good matchup to say, you want to go partners
go together.
And we could have the same horses and have more horses. And that's what we did last year. It was a good fit, good mix. Things have done well. They had a very good Monmouth Park. It's kind of fun where we won a bunch of races at Monmouth, and they give you the nice trophies at Monmouth Park, and I've just been distributing at the end of the meet. Hey, you guys, you want two of these, and I'm going to take two down to Florida, and I'm going to leave. I left two at my trophy column that I have at Monmouth Park at my house in New Jersey. So it's kind of neat, and it's a lot of fun. Ups and downs of racing. But right now, when the things are good, it's a lot. It's just great. Awesome.
Well, for those of you that have been listening, you want to have somebody to work with the Monmouth Circuit and the Northeast, and then down to Florida. Kelly, gets on the horses and can obviously pick them out for you. And if you're just getting started, you couldn't work with a better guy. And
I'm down to getting on the pony now, though. I threw up my back
come
five
on.
Years ago.
No, nah, yeah, get on a few.
I just sit on the pony right now. I got problems with L4, L5, and herniated discs and this and that. So right now I've just been pointing from the ground or pointing from the pony as to what to do, and things have been going pretty smoothly the last couple of years.
Well, we've talked to you for years, and very happy whenever a good one comes your way, and you obviously made it happen with this one in particular, the Looking at Lucky Colt. As seen on TV, and big, rangy, and looks like he'll stretch out a nice win in that juvenile sprint stake at Calder on Saturday. Kelly, continued success, and we'll see you later in the winter, and I know we'll be talking soon.
Okay, hopefully at the next weekend we'll show you another filly that over at Laurel.
At Laurel, nice.
Another stakes winner.
Well, that Smart Halo's, that's always been a very productive race. That has produced nice ones. Good target.
Okay. Good to talk to you.
Thanks, Kel. KJB, right. Kelly J. Breen, who, of course, you can follow on Twitter under Kelly. I think it's Kelly J. Breen is his. Let me make sure of that. I'm pretty sure that that's how he's got himself identified on your Twitter. Let's try Kelly J. Yeah. Actually, he puts the whole name, the whole middle name in. Kelly John Breen. And he's the guy in the paddock with the sharp cap. Now that Reed Baker is retired, Kelly's taken on the mantle of the sharp hat. Johnny D standing by. It's a holiday Monday. Every day is a holiday for when you're Johnny D. Good morning.
I must give off that vibe. That's all I can say. Every day is not a holiday here. Just so everyone knows.
Well, it's a constant vacation.
Yeah, that's what everyone thinks. I don't know. I'd better start whining more, crying more, something like that. I don't know. My wife says I cry enough, so I must just do it inside the house.
I was thinking of you yesterday. We were at Aqueduct. And I walk into the racing office, and the first person I see is our man, Ron Anderson. And it made me laugh because, everybody's wearing quilted vests and their barn coats and everybody's bundled up, for the early winter here in the Northeast. And, less than a week earlier, we were all basking in the Southern California sunlight.
Well, you weren't basking in any sunlight at about 6 o'clock in the morning at Santa Anita. I think it was probably in the high 30s, maybe the low 40s in the morning out there. And you're in that grandstand, which doesn't really get the sun until about 10 o'clock in the morning, things don't start to thaw out. It was cool. It really was in the morning out there at Santa Anita. But, of course, by 11 o'clock, I think you're in heaven.
Yeah, the scene, the way the scene shifted from, from the West Coast to the East made me, it kind of amused me, you know, that I saw so many people that had been out there and now they're all, you know, they look all lumpy and frumpy and
it's funny because I think it was last night, maybe we went out to dinner and we're getting ready to leave. And I said, where's my coat? You know, it's like, it's been 8 months since I've said that. Where's my
exactly.
coat? You know, and it's like all of a sudden, it's like you don't even start to, it's like you don't want winter to come or you don't think it's coming. And then it's here. You know, it's like you don't think about your coat. You don't ever say, well, I better find my coat because I'm going to need it soon. It's just like, where's my coat?
Well, we need it. And the time has come, it seems, you know, based on this trip to New York. And it's always, you know, Aqueduct, Belmont, too, frankly. I mean, Belmont, it's always cold at Belmont, just the way it faces. And, you know, it's just. It's amazing how it could be so much different from the backyard to the front side, really, even during the summer, it seems it sometimes. But Aqueduct, you know, you're right off the bay, and so, you know, it invariably, if the sun's not out, it feels chilly. But it was really fun to be there. They've done some nice things, actually. They created a new horseman's and owner's lounge that on the second floor. They took a section and, you know, kind of sealed it off, and they're actually going to push it even a little bit further into some of the box seats. And, you know, they never had that. And it seems like a really good use of space. And a lot of horsemen and owners were hanging out there. I went there to watch the fifth and see some of our partners. And some people seem to just not understand what Aqueduct is in the ecosystem of racing, not just in New York. It's an urban racetrack. It is not the Long Island racetrack. It's not the country pastoral racetrack. It's a city facility that is, you know, is it Spartan? Yeah, it is. But it, to me, it's got a certain appeal that, you know, it's just you know you're at Aqueduct instantly, and it's just a little rougher around the edges, but I love going there.
Well, I'm going to give you a slice of racing trivia that you don't know. I have never been to Aqueduct in my
really?
Life. Yeah. Now you ask why? Why? How is that possible? How is that even possible?
You've been in the racing game
your whole life. You've never been to Aqueduct. You've lived in back east. You grew up back east. Now you've been back about, 15 years, 12 years, whatever it's been, and you've never been to Aqueduct. So I keep trying to figure out how that's possible. The only thing I can figure out is that when I was young, really young, like a teenager, I pretty much hit the local stuff that I could hit quickly. Obviously, Liberty Bell, Philadelphia Park, Keystone, Atlantic City, the local stuff. And then as I got older and I left to go to college in California, I didn't come back for 30 years. So actually, when I did come back in the summers from college, I hit Belmont. I made it to Belmont in the summer. But again, Aqueduct wasn't open when I come home in the summers. So you're talking a 30-year stretch. And now that I've been back, I think I haven't been to Aqueduct because it just falls in a time frame where I'm hunkered down for the winter. Like, I don't leave my house from December 1st, unless I have to. I do make a few trips out, but December 1st until, like, you know, April, I don't leave my house, unless I'm forced. So, you know, it just never happened. And I've got to fix that. I've got to rectify that situation. How, when, and where, I don't know. But I've got to take care of that one.
No, there's plenty, you know, coming up even this month, you've got opportunity, you know, with the Holiday Fest.
Well, there you go. Well, my Thanksgiving, and you know I love Thanksgiving. My favorite holiday of the entire year. So you got Thanksgiving.
But don't jump the gun. Everybody's waiting. Everybody's waiting for you.
But then you've got the weekend, which that weekend I love. The Thanksgiving Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that is my favorite stretch of the entire year. You've got horse racing, you've got football, you've got college football, pro football, you've got basketballs rolling, you got all this stuff, everything is rolling, and you got leftovers. I mean, what else could a man want? Or a woman for that matter. It's a great time of year. So that's out. And then we get into December. Yeah. I'm going to have to pick a time and just make it happen. That's all. Because this is a glaring hole in my resume.
Big time. All right. Yeah, well, maybe.
And by the way, the cards at Aqueduct have been outstanding. Full field, competitive races, quality. It's been Saturday and even Sunday was enjoyable, but Saturday was a little, you know, they were great cards.
Yeah, the racing today too. In fact, Nick Tamaro is going to join us next, and we're going to do some handicapping of today's card and get Nick's final thoughts about Breeders' Cup too, and his BCBC experience. And by the way, a number of people have written to me. I've gotten like three emails and a couple of either Facebook or Twitter kind of inquiries about the BCBC posting when they will lay out, you know, everybody's bet. Last year that took about 3 weeks before it came. So I would say that, you know, another couple of weeks, and I'll put a request in and see if they've got a target date of when they're going to release the BCBC wagers of all the players, because that file is really fun and really, you know, you can learn a lot about, you know, how some of the, you know, the big bankroll contest, and when it comes to BCBC, you can even, you know, you don't even have to qualify it by talking about just the contest environment, you know, because it's cash, you know, it's a cash game and a cash tournament, and, you know, people are structuring bets like they, you know, do most days. So, I mean, yes, the amounts are bigger, but there's a lot to learn when those get released. So we'll get an answer on when they're coming out.
You know, you talked a little bit about Dick Girardi. We had a great BCBC competition. And, you know, I noticed also that you talked about a wager that he made, a contest wager. You mentioned it. It was a $2,000 exacta.
Yeah.
Straight. It was bricks and mortar to United.
Yep.
And that returned $137,200 and that vaulted him. I mean, it's like, why don't we play like that every day? But, I mean, that what a move that was. The other thing that I noticed was about this, that was Breeders' Cup weekend. And wagers that were made, you know, the competition was also available through ExpressBet, and we had a player wagered $32,500 in the I think it was the 11th race to win on the 9th, who I think was Bricks and Mortar. Mm-hmm. $32,005. It was a contest wager. Got back $65,000. A nice score. But then what happened on Saturday was we also had 3, 4, 5, 6. We had seven players hit the pick six for, you know, anywhere from, you know, depending on consolation, 3, 5 out of six is from 59,000, almost 60,000, down to 50, almost 58,000. So they were all right in the same ballpark. And the interesting thing is the cost of those tickets, because that's always my next question. You know, okay, they all had to pick six, but what were their tickets like? Were they $1 million tickets? Well, one of the tickets was $288. So you got to love that, because that's in a ballpark, right? $288 is in a ballpark. They range from $288 to $960. And then there was one ticket that was placed for $15,750. A pick six ticket for $15,750. And that ticket returned almost $60,000. That was a dollar pick six. So you see the different ways that people can, you know, is it only the big guys that hit? No, it's not. The big guys do hit sometimes. I'm not going to put in almost a $16,000 ticket, that's for sure. But a 288, yeah, I could do that. Another one was 324. We had a 432. 486. They're getting a little up there, but you know, you get a couple partners. It's possible is the
Absolutely.
Point I'm making. This is just express bet. So we had seven people hit the pick six there, and then we had a pick five ticket. I think this was on Friday. Pick five cost $256. 50 cent pick five returned almost $46,000. So, you know, I look at this stuff and I think, these people hit these big payoffs. You know, how do you, you know, somebody's phone number, or, you know, I could never do that because I don't have that kind of money. No, it's not true. It's not true. It's you can be a diligent handicapper, put in a reasonable ticket, and hit for a lot of money. Now, there are some people who the sixth race on, it looks like it was on Friday. I'm trying to run through here. The sixth race on Friday. All right. If I have this right, Structure Billy Bats. It was the juvenile turf. Structure Billy Bats Gear Jockey. But I think you've got Structure, which I had 6-1 as my last odds written down. Billy Bats 45, the last thing I wrote down, and Gear Jockey 70. That trifecta. Someone had a $5 trifecta, box 2489. 2489. And guess what? They should have played a super because they ran.
Yeah.
2894, and it was a $5 play, cost $120, and returned $30,000.
How about that?
That's sweet.
How about that?
Anyway, I love to look at these when I can get them, and when there's something notable. You know, I'll share them with everyone.
Absolutely. And because there's a lot. And that's why I'm getting these requests about, you know, when is this going to come available? And it's funny that you picked that spot yesterday. While I was sitting, speaking of that new lounge they created, I was sitting with Eddie Barker and we were watching that fifth race, and Eddie, as they're leaving, you know, as the horses in a break, he, you know, he's rooting a little bit. I said, what do you got here? I said, what are we rooting for? And he had two long prices, like Gear Jockey and Billy Bats. And he had keyed them in, I think he had keyed them everywhere. I think he'd keyed them second, or first, second, third, fourth, with like five logicals. And he ended up having, and he says, he said, this is, you know, pretty much how I play long shots. He'll take a couple, particularly in big fields, he'll take a couple of big prices that he thinks have a, you know, a chance to, for any board hit, first through fourth. And he'll key them. Sometimes he says he'll literally use all. And he hit it, the super. He ended up running third and fourth, and had it for 40 cents, had it four times. And it had to be, I think it was in the $1,800 range when it was all added up. And it, you know, it just, there's so many, particularly on Breeders' Cup Day, and that's why it's so anticipated. And the big, you know, the biggest stake days, because of all the pool size opportunity, the big field size opportunity, and, you know, that kind of an approach. And it you don't have to even pick winners. You just have to pick horses that, you know, you're placing in appropriate spots to be successful.
Well, and that's, I mean, we're in the, I don't want to say the sweet spot of gambling season as far as sports wagering goes. So you've got college football, you've got NFL, you've got college basketball has started now, you've got NBA, you've got NHL, and I think even the Canadian Football League is in the playoffs right now. But one distinct advantage that playing the horses has, now one distinct advantage is that you can bet a little and win a lot.
Yeah.
Is you can stay within your bankroll and use these, you know, you have price horses. You have, you know, in order to get a return of 50 to 1, you would have to string along, you know, an incredible parlay that, you know, where you're not going to hit it. It's almost impossible. But in racing, you can put together a couple of horses in exact or a try and get a 50 to 1 payoff. And it's not that, it's not unusual. We could run through the card. They're all over the place, you know?
Yep,
it's not a strange thing. Now, somebody will say, oh, the takeout. Okay. Takeout's high. But guess what? The takeout on parlays is through the roof. You know, they get like 40% on parlays on, you know, football wagering and basketball. You know, the most popular wagering in the world. National Football League. If you want to do some kind of a crazy parlay, Vegas reports that the books take on parlays is 40%. I mean, that's what their take is. That's what they end up keeping, 40%. So, you know, don't scream about the 25 when here's a chance to make a score. And yes, there's takeout, but. And what's crazy in all of this, really crazy, is that, excuse me, in the racing world, the takeout pays to put on the show. In the sports betting world,